Disc 7.
On her way back from the station, Miss Hinchcliffe stopped the car to pick up Miss Marple, who was hurrying along the street. "Hello," she shouted. "You'll get very wet. Come and have tea with us. I saw a bunch waiting for the bus. You'll be all alone at the vicarage. Come and join us. Murgatroyd and I are doing a bit of reconstruction of the crime. I rather think we're just getting somewhere. Mind the dog. She's rather nervous." "What a beauty." "Yes, lovely bitch, isn't she? Those fools kept her at the station since this morning without letting me know. I told them off, the lazy bees. Excuse my language. I was brought up by grooms at home in Ireland." The little car turned with a jerk into the small backyard of Boulder's. A crowd of eager ducks and fowls encircled the two ladies as they descended. "Oh, curse Murgatroyd," said Miss Hinchcliffe. "She hasn't given them their corn."
"Is it difficult to get corn?" Miss Marple inquired.
Miss Hinchcliffe winked. "I'm in with most of the farmers," she said. Shooing away the hens, she escorted Miss Marple towards the cottage. "Hope you're not too wet."
"No, this is a very good Macintosh."
"I'll light the fire if Murgatroyd hasn't lit it. Hiya, Murgatroyd! Where is the woman? Murgatroyd? Where's that dog? She's disappeared now." A slow, dismal howl came from outside. "Curse the silly bitch!" Miss Hinchcliffe tramped to the door and called. "Hey, up! Cutie! Cutie!" "Damn silly name, but that's what they called her, apparently. Let's find her another name. Hiya! Cutie!" The red setter was sniffing at something lying below the taut string where a row of garments swirled in the wind. "Murgatroyd's not even had the sense to bring the washing in. Where is she?" Again the red setter nosed at what seemed to be a pile of clothes, and raised her nose high in the air and howled again. "What's the matter with that dog?" Miss Hinchcliffe strode across the grass. And quickly, apprehensively, Miss Marple ran after her. They stood there, side by side, the rain beating down on them, and the older woman's arm went round the younger one's shoulders. She felt the muscles go stiff and taut as Miss Hinchcliffe stood looking down on the thing lying there with the blue, congested face and the protruding tongue. "I'll kill whoever did this," said Miss Hinchcliffe in a low, quiet voice, "if once I get my hands on her." Miss Marple said, questioningly, "Her?" Miss Hinchcliffe turned a ravaged face towards her. "Yes. I know who it is, near enough. That is, it's one of three possibles."
She stood there for another moment, looking down at her dead friend, and then turned towards the house. Her voice was dry and hard.
"We must ring up the police," she said. "And while we're waiting for them, I'll tell you. My fault, in a way, that Murgatroyd's lying out there. I made a game of it. Murder isn't a game."
"No," said Miss Marple. "Murder isn't a game."
"You know something about it, don't you?" said Miss Hinchcliffe as she lifted the receiver and dialed. She made a brief report and hung up. "They'll be here in a few minutes." "Yes, I heard that you'd been mixed up in this sort of business before. I think it was Edmund Swettenham told me so. Do you want to hear what we were doing, Murgatroyd and I?"
Succinctly she described the conversation held before her departure for the station.
"She called after me, you know, just as I was leaving. That's how I know it's a woman and not a man. If I'd waited, if only I'd listened. God damn it! The dog could have stopped where she was for another quarter of an hour."
"Don't blame yourself, my dear. That does no good. One can't foresee."
"No, one can't. Something
tapped against the window, I remember. Perhaps she was outside there, then. Yes, of course, she must have been. Coming into the house, and there were Murgatroyd and I shouting at each other, top of our voices. She heard. She heard it all. You haven't told me yet what your friend said.
Just one sentence. She wasn't there. She paused. You see? There were three women we hadn't eliminated. Mrs. Swettenham, Mrs. Easterbrook, Julia Simmons. And one of those three wasn't there. She wasn't there in the drawing room because she had slipped out through the other door and was out in the hall.
Yes, said Miss Marple. I see.
It's one of those three women. I don't know which, but I'll find out.
Excuse me, said Miss Marple, but did she... Did Miss Murgatroyd, I mean, say it exactly as you said it?
How do you mean, as I said it?
Oh, dear, how can I explain? You said it like this. She wasn't there. An equal emphasis on every word. You see, there are three ways you could say it. You could say, she wasn't there, very personal. Or again, she wasn't there, confirming some suspicion already held. Or else you could say, and this is nearer to the way you said it just now, she wasn't there. Quite blankly, with the emphasis, if there was emphasis, on the there.
I don't know. Miss Hinchcliffe shook her head. I can't remember. How the hell can I remember? I think, yes, surely she'd say she wasn't there. That would be the natural way, I should think. But I simply don't know. Does it make any difference?
Yes, said Miss Marple thoughtfully. I think so. It's a very slight indication, of course. But I think it is an indication. Yes, I should think it makes a lot of difference.
Chapter 20. Miss Marple is Missing. The postman, rather to his disgust, had lately been given orders to make an afternoon delivery of letters in Chipping Cleghorn as well as a morning one. On this particular afternoon, he left three letters at Little Paddock's at exactly 5:10. One was addressed to Philippa Hames in a schoolboy's hand. The other two were for Miss Blacklock. She opened them as she and Philippa sat down at the tea-table. The torrential rain had enabled Philippa to leave Dyer's Hall early today, since once she had shut up the greenhouses, there was nothing more to do. Miss Blacklock tore open her first letter, which was a bill for repairing the kitchen boiler. She snorted angrily. Diamonds' prices are preposterous, quite preposterous. Still, I suppose all the other people are just as bad. She opened the second letter, which was in a handwriting quite unknown to her. Dear Cousin Letty, it said, I hope it will be all right for me to come to you on Tuesday. I wrote to Patrick 2 days ago, but he hasn't answered, so I presume it's all right. Mother is coming to England next month and hopes to see you then. My train arrives at Chipping Cleghorn at 6:15, if that's convenient. Yours affectionately, Julia Simmons. Miss Blacklock read the letter once with astonishment pure and simple, and then again with a certain grimness. She looked up at Philippa, who was smiling over her son's letter. Are Julia and Patrick back, do you know? Philippa looked up. Yes, they came in just after I did. They went upstairs to change. They were wet. Perhaps you'd not mind going and calling them.
Of course I will.
Wait a moment. I'd like you to read this. She handed Philippa the letter she had received. Philippa read it and frowned I don't understand. Nor do I, quite. I think it's about time I did. Call Patrick and Julia, Philippa. Philippa called from the bottom of the stairs.
Patrick! Julia! Miss Blacklock wants you.
Patrick came running down the stairs and entered the room.
Don't go, Philippa, said Miss Blacklock.
Hello, Aunt Letty, said Patrick cheerfully. Want me?
Yes, I do.
Perhaps you'll give me an explanation of this?
Patrick's face showed an almost comical dismay as he read.
I meant to telegraph her. What an ass I am!
This letter, I presume, is from your sister, Julia?
Yes, yes, it is.
Miss Blacklock said grimly, Then who, may I ask, is the young woman whom you brought here as Julia Simmons, and whom I was given to understand was your sister and my cousin?
Well, you see, Aunt Letty, the fact of the matter is, I can explain it all. I know I oughtn't to have done it, but it really seemed more of a lark than anything else. If you'll just let me explain,
I am waiting for you to explain. Who is this young woman?
Well, I met her at a cocktail party soon after I got demobbed. We got talking, and I said I was coming here, and then, well, we thought it might be rather a good wheeze if I brought her along. You see, Julia, the real Julia, was mad to go on the stage, and Mother had seven fits at the idea. However, Julia got a chance to join a jolly good repertory company up in Perth or somewhere, and she thought she'd give it a try. But she thought she'd keep Mum calm by letting Mum think that she was here with me studying to be a dispenser, like a good little girl.
I still want to know who this other young woman is. Patrick turned with relief as Julia, cool and aloof, came into the room. The balloon's gone up, he said. Julia raised her eyebrows. Then, still cool, she came forward and sat down.
Okay, she said. That's that. I suppose you're very angry.
She studied Miss Blacklock's face with almost dispassionate interest.
I should be if I were you.
Who are you?
Julia sighed. I think the moment's come when I make a clean breast of things. Here we go. I'm one half of the Pip and Emma combination. To be exact, my christened name is Emma Jocelyn Stamfordis. Only father soon dropped the Stamfordis. I think he called himself De Courcy next. My father and mother, let me tell you, split up about 3 years after Pip and I were born. Each of them went their own way, and they split us up. I was father's part of the loot. He was a bad parent on the whole, though quite a charming one. I had various desert spells of being educated in convents, when father hadn't any money or was preparing to engage in some particularly nefarious deal. He used to pay the first term with every sign of affluence, and then depart and leave me on the nuns' hands for a year or two. In the intervals, he and I had some very good times together, moving in cosmopolitan society. However, the war separated us completely. I've no idea what's happened to him. I had a few adventures myself. I was with the French Resistance for a time. It was quite exciting. To cut a long story short, I landed up in London and began to think about my future. I knew that Mother's brother, with whom she'd had a frightful row, had died a very rich man. I looked up his will to see if there was anything for me. I wasn't. Well, not directly, that is to say. I made a few inquiries about his widow. It seemed she was quite gaga and kept under drugs and was dying by inches. Frankly, it looked as though you were my best bet. You were going to come into a hell of a lot of money, and from all I could find out, you didn't seem to have anyone much to spend it on. Look, I'll be quite frank. It occurred to me that if I could get to know you in a friendly kind of way, and if you took a fancy to me, well, after all, conditions have changed a bit, haven't they, since Uncle Randall died?
I mean, any money we ever had has been swept away in the cataclysm of Europe. I thought you might pity a poor orphan girl all alone in the world and make her perhaps a small allowance. Oh, you did you? Said Miss Blacklock grimly. Yes. Of course, I hadn't seen you then. I visualized a kind of sob-stuff approach. And then, by a marvellous stroke of luck, I met Patrick here. And he turned out to be your nephew or cousin or something. Well, that struck me as a marvellous chance. I went bull-headed for Patrick, and he fell for me in a most gratifying way. The real Julia was all wet about this acting stuff, and I soon persuaded her it was her duty to art to go and fix herself up in some uncomfortable lodgings in Perth and train to be the new Sarah Bernhardt. You mustn't blame Patrick too much. He felt awfully sorry for me all alone in the world, and he soon thought it would be a really marvellous idea for me to come here as his sister and do my stuff. And he also approved of your continuing to tell a tissue of lies to the police. Have a heart, Letty. Don't you see that when that ridiculous hold-up business happened, or rather after it happened, I began to feel I was in a bit of a spot. Well, let's face it, I've got a perfectly good motive for putting you out of the way. You've only got my word for it now that I wasn't the one who tried to do it. You can't expect me deliberately to go and incriminate myself. Even Patrick got nasty ideas about me from time to time, and if even he could think things like that, what on earth would the police think? That detective inspector struck me as a man of singularly sceptical mind. No, I figured out the only thing for me to do was to sit tight as Julia and just fade away when term came to an end. How was I to know that fool Julia, the real Julia, would go and have a row with the producer and fling the whole thing up in a fit of temperament? She writes to Patrick and asks if she can come here, and instead of wiring her keep away, he goes and forgets to do anything at all. She cast an angry glance at Patrick. Of all the utter idiots! She sighed. You don't know the straits I've been put to in Milchester. Of course, I haven't been to the hospital at all, but I had to go somewhere. Hours and hours I've spent in the pictures, seeing the most frightful films over and over again. Pip and Emma, murmured Miss Blacklock. I never believed, somehow, in spite of what the inspector said, that they were real. She looked searchingly at Julia. "You're Emma," she said. "Where's Pip?" Julia's eyes, limpid and innocent, met hers. "I don't know," she said. "I haven't the least idea." "I think you're lying, Julia. When did you see him last?" Was there a momentary hesitation before Julia spoke? She said clearly and deliberately, "I haven't seen him since we were both 3 years old, when my mother took him away. I haven't seen either him or my mother. I don't know where they are." "And that's all you have to say?" Julia sighed. "I could say I was sorry, but it wouldn't really be true. Because actually I'd do the same thing again. Though not if I'd known about this murder business, of course." "Julia," said Miss Blacklock, "I call you that because I'm used to it. You were with the French Resistance, you say?" "Yes, for about 18 months." "Then I suppose you learned to shoot." Again those cool blue eyes met hers. "I can shoot all right. I'm a first-class shot." "I didn't shoot at you, Letitia Blacklock. Though you've only got my word for that. But I can tell you this, that if I had shot at you, I wouldn't have been likely to miss." The sound of a car driving up to the door broke through the tenseness of the moment. "Who can that be?" asked Miss Blacklock. Mitzi put a tousled head in. She was showing the whites of her eyes. "It is the police," come again, she said. This, it is persecution. Why will they not leave us alone? I will not bear it. I will write to the Prime Minister. I will write to your King.
Craddock's hand put her firmly and not too kindly aside. He came in with such a grim set to his lips that they all looked at him apprehensively. This was a new Inspector Craddock. He said sternly, Miss Murgatroyd has been murdered. She was strangled not more than an hour ago. His eye singled out Julia. You, Miss Simmons, where have you been all day? Julia said wearily, In Milchester. I've just got in. And you? The eye went on to Patrick. Yes. Did you both come back here together? Yes. Yes, we did, said Patrick. No, said Julia. It's no good, Patrick. That's the kind of lie that will be found out at once. The bus people know as well. I came back on the earlier bus, Inspector, the one that gets here at 4 o'clock. And what did you do then? I went for a walk. In the direction of Boulders? No, I went across the fields. He stared at her. Julia, her face pale, her lips tense, stared back. Before anyone could speak, the telephone rang. Miss Blacklock, with an inquiring glance at Craddock, picked up the receiver. Yes? Who? Oh, Bunch. What? No. No, she hasn't. I've no idea. Yes, he's here now. She lowered the instrument and said, Mrs. Harmon would like to speak to you, Inspector. Miss Marple has not come back to the vicarage, and Mrs. Harmon is worried about her. Craddock took two strides forward and gripped the telephone. Craddock speaking. I'm worried, Inspector. Bunch's voice came through with a childish tremor in it. Aunt Jane's out somewhere, and I don't know where. And they say that Miss Murgatroyd's been killed. Is it true? Yes, it's true, Mrs. Harmon. Miss Marple was there with Miss Hinchcliffe when they found the body. Oh, so that's where she is, Bunch sounded relieved. No, no, I'm afraid she isn't. Not now. She left there about, let me see, 30 minutes ago. She hasn't got home? No, she hasn't. It's only 10 minutes' walk. Where can she be? Perhaps she's called in on one of your neighbours. I've rung them up, all of them. She's not there. I'm frightened, Inspector. So am I, thought Craddock. He said quickly, I'll come round to you at once. Oh, do. There's a piece of paper. She was writing on it before she went out. I don't know if it means anything. It just seems gibberish to me. Craddock replaced the receiver. Miss Blacklock said anxiously, Has something happened to Miss Marple? Oh, I hope not. I hope not, too. His mouth was grim. She's so old and frail. I know. Miss Blacklock, standing with her hand pulling at the choker of pearls round her neck, said in a hoarse voice, It's getting worse and worse. Whoever's doing these things must be mad, Inspector, quite mad. I wonder. The choker of pearls round Miss Blacklock's neck broke under the clutch of her nervous fingers. The smooth white globules rolled all over the room. Letitia cried out in an anguished tone, My pearls! My pearls! The agony in her voice was so acute that they all looked at her in astonishment. She turned, her hand to her throat, and rushed, sobbing, out of the room. Philippa began picking up the pearls. I've never seen her so upset over anything, she said. Of course, she always wears them. Do you think, perhaps, that someone special gave them to her? Randall Girdler, perhaps?
It's possible, said the inspector slowly.
They're not... They couldn't be... real, by any chance? Philippa asked from where, on her knees, she was still collecting the white shining globes. Taking one in his hand, Craddock was just about to reply contemptuously, Real, of course not,
when he suddenly stifled the words. After all, could the pearls be real? They were so large, so even, so white, that their falseness seemed palpable, but Craddock remembered suddenly a police case where a string of real pearls had been bought for a few shillings in a pawnbroker's shop. Letitia Blacklock had assured him that there was no jewellery of value in the house. If these pearls were, by any chance, genuine, they must be worth a fabulous sum. And if Randall Girdler had given them to her, then they might be worth any sum you cared to name. They looked false. They must be false. But if they were real, why not? She might herself be unaware of their value. Or might she choose to protect her treasure by treating it as though it were a cheap ornament worth a couple of guineas at most? What would they be worth if real? A fabulous sum. Worth doing murder for, if anybody knew about them. With a start, the inspector wrenched himself away from his speculations. Miss Marple was missing. He must go to the vicarage. He found Bunch and her husband waiting for him, their faces anxious and drawn. "She hasn't come back," said Bunch. "Did she say she was coming back here when she left Boulder's?" asked Julian.
"She didn't actually say so," said Craddock slowly, throwing his mind back to the last time he had seen Jane Marple.
He remembered the grimness of her lips and the severe frosty light in those unusually gentle blue eyes. Grimness, an inexorable determination to do what? To go where?
"She was talking to Sergeant Fletcher when I last saw her," he said. "Just by the gate. And then she went through it and out. I took it she was going straight home to the vicarage. I would have sent her in a car, but there was so much to attend to, and she slipped away very quietly. Fletcher may know something. Where's Fletcher?"
But Sergeant Fletcher, it seemed, as Craddock learned when he rang up Boulder's, was neither to be found there, nor had he left any message where he had gone. There was some idea that he had returned to Milchester for some reason. The inspector rang up headquarters in Milchester, but no news of Fletcher was to be found there. Then Craddock turned to Bunch as he remembered what she had told him over the telephone. "Where's that paper? You said she'd been writing something on a bit of paper." Bunch brought it to him. He spread it out on the table and looked down on it. Bunch leant over his shoulder and spelled it out as he read. The writing was shaky and not easy to read. "Lamp." Then came the word "violets." Then, after a space, "Where is bottle of aspirin?" The next item in this curious list was more difficult to make out. "Delicious death," Bunch read. "That's Mitzi's cake."
"Making inquiries," read Craddock.
"Inquiries? What about, I wonder? What's this? Severe affliction bravely borne? What on earth?"
"Iodine," read the inspector. "Pearls, ah, pearls." "And then Letty. Her E's looked like O's. And then Bairn. And what's this? Old age pension." They looked at each other in bewilderment. Craddock recapitulated swiftly. "Lamp, violets, where is bottle of aspirin? Delicious death, making inquiries, severe affliction bravely borne, iodine, pearls, Letty, Bairn, old age pension." Bunch asked,
"Does it mean anything? Anything at all? I can't see any connection."
Craddock said slowly, "I've just a glimmer, but I don't see. It's odd that she should have put down that about pearls."
"What about pearls? What does it mean?"
"Does Miss Blacklock always wear that 3-tier choker of pearls?"
"Yes, she does."
We laugh about it sometimes. They're so dreadfully false-looking, aren't they? But I suppose she thinks it's fashionable.
There might be another reason, said Craddock slowly.
You don't mean that they're real? Oh, they couldn't be.
How often have you had an opportunity of seeing real pearls of that size, Mrs. Harmon?
But they're so glassy.
Craddock shrugged his shoulders. Anyway, they don't matter now. It's Miss Marple that matters. We've got to find her. They'd got to find her before it was too late. But perhaps it was already too late. Those penciled words showed that she was on the track. But that was dangerous. Horribly dangerous. And where the hell was Fletcher? Craddock strode out of the vicarage to where he'd left his car. Search. That was all he could do. Search. A voice spoke to him out of the dripping laurels.
Sir, said Sergeant Fletcher urgently. Sir!
Chapter 21. Three Women. Dinner was over at Little Paddock's. It had been a silent and uncomfortable meal. Patrick, uneasily aware of having fallen from grace, only made spasmodic attempts at conversation, and such as he did make were not well received. Philippa Hames was sunk in abstraction. Miss Blacklock herself had abandoned the effort to behave with her normal cheerfulness. She had changed for dinner and had come down wearing her necklace of cameos, but for the first time fear showed from her darkly circled eyes and betrayed itself by her twitching hands. Julia alone had maintained her air of cynical detachment throughout the evening.
"I'm sorry, Letty," she said, "that I can't pack my bag and go. But I presume the police wouldn't allow it. I don't suppose I'll darken your roof, or whatever the expression is, for long. I should imagine that Inspector Craddock will be round with a warrant and the handcuffs at any moment. In fact, I can't imagine why something of the kind hasn't happened already."
"He is looking for the old lady, for Miss Marple," said Miss Blacklock.
"Do you think she's been murdered, too?" Patrick asked with scientific curiosity. "But why? What could she know?"
"I don't know," said Miss Blacklock dully. "Perhaps Miss Murgatroyd told her something."
"If she's been murdered, too," said Patrick, "there seems to be logically only one person who could have done it."
"Who?"
"Hinchcliffe, of course," said Patrick triumphantly. "That's where she was last seen alive, at Boulder's. My solution would be that she never left Boulder's."
"My head aches," said Miss Blacklock in a dull voice. She pressed her fingers to her forehead. "Why should Hinch murder Miss Marple? It doesn't make sense."
"It would if Hinch had really murdered Murgatroyd," said Patrick triumphantly.
Philippa came out of her apathy to say, "Hinch wouldn't murder Murgatroyd." Patrick was in an argumentative mood.
"She might have, if Murgatroyd had blundered on something to show that she, Hinch, was the criminal."
"Anyway, Hinch was at the station when Murgatroyd was killed."
"She could have murdered Murgatroyd before she left."
Startling them all, Letitia Blacklock suddenly screamed out, "Murder, murder, murder! Can't you talk of anything else? I'm frightened, don't you understand? I'm frightened. I wasn't before. I thought I could take care of myself. But what can you do against a murderer who's waiting and watching and biding his time? Oh, God!" She dropped her head forward on her hands. A moment later she looked up and apologized stiffly. "I'm sorry. I lost control."
"That's all right, Aunt Letty," said Patrick affectionately. "I'll look after you."
"You," was all Letitia Blacklock said, but the disillusionment behind the word was almost an accusation. That had been shortly before dinner, and Mitzi had then created a diversion by coming and declaring that she was not going to cook the dinner.
I do not do anything more in this house. I go to my room. I lock myself in. I stay there until it is daylight. I am afraid. People are being killed. That Miss Murgatroyd with her stupid English face. Who would want to kill her? Only a maniac. Then it is a maniac that is about. And a maniac does not care who he kills. But me, I do not want to be killed. There are shadows in that kitchen, and I hear noises. I think there is someone out in the yard, and then I think I see a shadow go by the larder door, and then it is footsteps I hear. So I go now to my room, and I lock the door, and perhaps even I put the chest of drawers against it. And in the morning I tell that cruel, hard policeman that I go away from here. And if he will not let me, I say, I scream, and I scream, and I scream until you have to let me go.
Everybody, with a vivid recollection of what Mitzi could do in the screaming line, shuddered at the threat.
So, I go to my room, said Mitzi, repeating the statement once more to make her intentions quite clear.
With a symbolic action, she cast off the cretonne apron she had been wearing.
Good night, Miss Blacklock. Perhaps in the morning you may not be alive. So, in case that is so, I say goodbye.
She departed abruptly, and the door, with its usual gentle little whine, closed softly after her. Julia got up. I'll see to dinner, she said in a matter-of-fact way. Rather a good arrangement. Less embarrassing for you all than having me sit down at table with you. Patrick, since he's constituted himself your protector, Aunt Letty, had better taste every dish first. I don't want to be accused of poisoning you on top of everything else. So Julia had cooked and served a really excellent meal. Philippa had come out to the kitchen with an offer of assistance, but Julia had said firmly that she didn't want any help. Julia, there's something I want to say. This is no time for girlish confidences, said Julia firmly. Go back in the dining room, Philippa. Now dinner was over, and they were in the drawing room with coffee on the small table by the fire, and nobody seemed to have anything to say. They were waiting, that was all. At 8:30, Inspector Craddock rang up.
"I shall be with you in about a quarter of an hour's time," he announced. "I'm bringing Colonel and Mrs. Easterbrook and Mrs. Swettenham and her son with me."
"But really, Inspector, I can't cope with people tonight."
Miss Blacklock's voice sounded as though she were at the end of her tether.
"I know how you feel, Miss Blacklock. I'm sorry. But this is urgent."
"Have you found Miss Marple?"
"No," said the inspector, and rang off.
Julia took the coffee tray out to the kitchen, where, to her surprise, she found Mitzi contemplating the piled-up dishes and plates by the sink. Mitzi burst into a torrent of words.
"See what you do in my so nice kitchen! That frying pan! Only for omelettes do I use it! And you, what have you used it for?"
"Frying onions."
"Ruined! Ruined! It will now have to be washed, and I never, never do I wash my omelette pan. I rub it carefully over with a greasy newspaper, that is all. And this saucepan here that you have used, that one, I use him only for milk."
"Well, I don't know what pans you use for what," said Julia crossly. "You chose to go to bed, and why on earth you've chosen to get up again, I can't imagine. Go away again and leave me to wash up in peace."
"No, I will not let you use my kitchen." "Oh, Mitzi, you are impossible."
Julia stalked angrily out of the kitchen, and at that moment the doorbell rang.
"I do not go to the door,"
Mitzi called from the kitchen. Julia muttered an impolite continental expression under her breath and stalked to the front door. It was Miss Hinchcliffe.
"Evening," she said in her gruff voice. "Sorry to barge in. Inspector's rung up, I expect."
"He didn't tell us you were coming," said Julia, leading the way to the drawing room.
"He said I needn't come unless I liked," said Miss Hinchcliffe. "But I do like."
Nobody offered Miss Hinchcliffe sympathy or mentioned Miss Murgatroyd's death. The ravaged face of the tall, vigorous woman told its own tale and would have made any expression of sympathy an impertinence.
"Oh, turn all the lights on," said Miss Blacklock, "and put more coal on the fire. I'm cold, horribly cold. Come and sit here by the fire, Miss Hinchcliffe. The inspector said he would be here in a quarter of an hour. It must be nearly that now."
"Mitz has come down again," said Julia.
"Has she? Sometimes I think that girl's mad, quite mad. But then, perhaps we're all mad."
"I've no patience with this saying that all people who commit crimes are mad," barked Miss Hinchcliffe. "Horribly and intelligently sane. That's what I think a criminal is."
The sound of a car was heard outside, and presently Craddock came in with Colonel and Mrs. Easterbrook, and Edmund and Mrs. Swettenham. They were all curiously subdued. Colonel Easterbrook said, in a voice that was like an echo of his usual tones,
"Huh. Good fire."
Mrs. Easterbrook wouldn't take off her fur coat, and sat down close to her husband. Her face, usually pretty and rather vapid, was like a little pinched weasel face. Edmund was in one of his furious moods and scowled at everybody. Mrs. Swettenham made what was evidently a great effort, and which resulted in a kind of parody of herself.
"Oh, it's awful, isn't it?" she said conversationally. "Everything, I mean. And really, the less one says, the better, because one doesn't know who next. It's like the plague. Dear Miss Blacklock, don't you think you ought to have a little brandy? Just half a wine glass, even? I always think there's nothing like brandy. Such a wonderful stimulant. It seems so terrible of us forcing our way in here like this, but Inspector Craddock made us come. And it seems so terrible she hasn't been found, you know. That poor old thing from the vicarage, I mean. Bunch Harmon is nearly frantic. Nobody knows where she went instead of going home. She didn't come to us. I've not seen her today. And I should know if she had come to the house, because I was in the drawing-room, at the back, you know, and Edmund was in his study writing, and that's at the front. So if she'd come either way, we should have seen. And, oh, I do hope and pray that nothing has happened to that dear, sweet old thing. All her faculties still, and everything.
Mother," said Edmund in a voice of acute suffering, "can't you shut up?"
"I'm sure, dear, I don't want to say a word," said Mrs. Swettenham,
and sat down on the sofa by Julia. Inspector Craddock stood near the door. Facing him, almost in a row, were the three women, Julia and Mrs. Swettenham on the sofa, Mrs. Easterbrook on the arm of her husband's chair. He had not brought about this arrangement, but it suited him very well. Miss Blacklock and Miss Hinchcliffe were crouching over the fire. Edmund stood near them. Philippa was far back in the shadows. Craddock began without preamble.
"You all know that Miss Murgatroyd's been killed," he began. "We've reason to believe that the person who killed her was a woman. And for certain other reasons, we can narrow it down still more. I'm about to ask certain ladies here to account for what they were doing between the hours of 4 and 4:20 this afternoon. I've already had an account of her movements from the young lady who has been calling herself Miss Simmons. I will ask her to repeat that statement. At the same time, Miss Simmons, I must caution you that you need not answer if you think your answers may incriminate you, and anything you say will be taken down by Constable Edwards and may be used as evidence in court."
"You have to say that, don't you?" said Julia. She was rather pale, but still composed. "I repeat that between 4 and 4:30 I was walking along the field leading down to the brook by Compton Farm. I came back to the road by that field with 3 poplars in it. I didn't meet anyone, as far as I can remember. I did not go near boulders." "Mrs. Swettenham," Edmund said, "are you cautioning all of us?" The inspector turned to him.
"No. At the moment, only Miss Simmons.
I have no reason to believe that any other statement made will be incriminating, but anyone, of course, is entitled to have a solicitor present and to refuse to answer questions unless he is present.
Oh, but that would be a very silly and a complete waste of time, cried Mrs. Swettenham. I'm sure I can tell you at once exactly what I was doing. That's what you want, isn't it? Shall I begin now?
Yes, please, Mrs. Swettenham.
Now, let me see.
Mrs. Swettenham closed her eyes, opened them again.
Of course, I had nothing at all to do with killing Miss Murgatroyd. I'm sure everybody here knows that.
But I'm a woman of the world. I know quite well that the police have to ask all the most unnecessary questions and write the answers down very carefully, because it's all for what they call the record. That's it, isn't it?
Mrs. Swettenham flashed the question at the diligent Constable Edwards and added graciously, I'm not going too fast for you, I hope.
Constable Edwards, a good shorthand writer, but with little social savoir-faire, turned red to the ears and replied,
It's quite all right, madam. Well, perhaps a little slower would be better.
Mrs. Swettenham resumed her discourse with emphatic pauses where she considered a comma or a full stop might be appropriate.
Well, of course it's difficult to say exactly, because I've not got really a very good sense of time. And ever since the war, quite half-hour clocks haven't gone at all, and the ones that do go are often either fast or slow or stop because we haven't wound them up.
Mrs. Swettenham paused to let this picture of confused time sink in, and then went on earnestly.
What I think I was doing at 4 o'clock was turning the heel of my sock, and for some extraordinary reason I was going round the wrong way, in pearl, you know, not plain. But if I wasn't doing that, I must have been outside snipping off the dead chrysanthemums. No, that was earlier, before the rain.
The rain, said the inspector, started at 4:10 exactly.
Did it now? That helps a lot. Of course I was upstairs putting a wash basin in the passage where the rain always comes through. And it was coming through so fast I guessed at once the gutter was stopped up again. So I came down and got my mackintosh and rubber boots. I called Edmund, but he didn't answer, so I thought perhaps he'd got to a very important place in his novel, and I wouldn't disturb him. And I've done it quite often myself before. With the broom handle, you know, tied onto that long thing you push up windows with.
You mean, said Craddock, noting bewilderment on his subordinate's face, that you were cleaning out the gutter?
Yes, it was all choked up with leaves. It took a long time, and I got rather wet, but I got it clear at last. And then I went in, and got changed and washed. So smelly, dead leaves. And then I went into the kitchen and put the kettle on. It was 6:15 by the kitchen clock.
Constable Edwards blinked.
Which means, finished Mrs. Swettenham triumphantly, that it was exactly 5:20. Or near enough, she added.
Did anyone see what you were doing whilst you were out cleaning the gutter?
No, indeed, said Mrs. Swettenham. I'd have soon roped them in to help if they had. It's a most difficult thing to do single-handed.
So, by your own statement, you were outside in a mackintosh and boots at the time when the rain was coming down, and according to you, you were employed during that time in cleaning out a gutter, but you have no one who can substantiate that statement.
You can look at the gutter, said Mrs. Swettenham. It's beautifully clear.
Did you hear your mother call to you, Mr. Swettenham?
No, said Edmund. I was fast asleep. Edmund, said his mother reproachfully. I thought you were writing.
Inspector Craddock turned to Mrs. Easterbrook. Now, Mrs. Easterbrook...
I was sitting with Archie in his study, said Mrs. Easterbrook, fixing wide, innocent eyes on him. We were listening to the wireless together, weren't we, Archie?
There was a pause. Colonel Easterbrook was very red in the face. He took his wife's hand in his...
You don't understand these things, kitten, he said. Well, I must say, Inspector, you've rather sprung this business on us. My wife, you know, has been terribly upset by all this. She's nervous and highly strung and doesn't appreciate the importance of taking due consideration before she makes a statement.
Archie, cried Mrs. Easterbrook reproachfully, are you going to say you weren't with me?
Well, I wasn't, was I, my dear? I mean, one's got to stick to the facts. Very important in this sort of inquiry. I was talking to Lampson, the farmer at Croft End, about some chicken netting. That was about 3:45. I didn't get home until after the rain had stopped. Just before tea, 4:45, Laura was toasting the scones.
And had you been out also, Mrs. Easterbrook? The pretty face looked more like a weasel's than ever. Her eyes had a trapped look.
No, no, I just sat listening to the wireless. I didn't go out, not then. I'd been out earlier, about 3:30. Just for a little walk, not far.
She looked as though she expected more questions, but Craddock said quietly, "That's all, Mrs. Easterbrook." He went on, "These statements will be typed out. You can read them and sign them if they are substantially correct." Mrs. Easterbrook looked at him with sudden venom.
"Why don't you ask the others where they were? That Hames woman and Edmund Swettenham. How do you know he was asleep indoors? Nobody saw him."
Inspector Craddock said quietly, "Miss Murgatroyd, before she died, made a certain statement. On the night of the hold-up here, someone was absent from this room. Someone who was supposed to have been in the room all the time. Miss Murgatroyd told her friend the names of the people she did see. By a process of elimination, she made the discovery that there was someone she did not see."
"Nobody could see anything," said Julia.
"Murgatroyd could," said Miss Hinchcliffe, speaking suddenly in her deep voice. "She was over there behind the door, where Inspector Craddock is now. She was the only person who could see anything of what was happening."
"Aha! That is what you think, is it?"
demanded Mitzi. She made one of her dramatic entrances, flinging open the door and almost knocking Craddock sideways. She was in a frenzy of excitement.
"Ah, you do not ask Mitzi to come in here with the others, do you, you stiff policeman? I am only Mitzi. Mitzi in the kitchen. Let her stay in the kitchen, there she belongs. But I tell you that Mitzi, as well as anyone else, and perhaps better, yes, better, can see things. Yes, I see things. I see something the night of the burglary. I see something, and I do not quite believe it, and I hold my tongue till now. I think to myself, I will not tell what it is I have seen. Not yet. I will wait."
"And when everything had calmed down, you meant to ask for a little money from a certain person, eh?" said Craddock.
Mitzi turned on him like an angry cat. "And why not? Why look down your nose? Why should I not be paid for it if I have been so generous as to keep silence? Especially if some day there will be money, much, much money. Oh, I have heard things. I know what goes on. I know this Pip Emmer, this secret society of which she flung a dramatic finger towards Julia, is an agent. Yes, I would have waited and asked for money, but now I am afraid. I would rather be safe. For soon, perhaps someone will kill me. So, I will tell you what I know."
"All right, then," said the inspector skeptically. "What do you know?"
"I tell you," Mitzi spoke solemnly, "on that night, I am not in the pantry cleaning silver, as I say. I am already in the dining room when I hear the gun go off. I look through the keyhole. The hall, it is black. But the gun go off again, and the torch, it falls, and it swings round as it falls, and I see her. I see her there, close to him with the gun in her hand. I see Miss Blacklock.
Me? Miss Blacklock sat up in astonishment. You must be mad.
Oh, but that's impossible, cried Edmund. Mitzi couldn't have seen Miss Blacklock.
Craddock cut in, and his voice had the corrosive quality of deadly acid.
Couldn't she, Mr. Swettenham? And why not? Because it wasn't Miss Blacklock who was standing there with a gun. It was you, wasn't it?
I? But of course not. What the hell?
You took Colonel Easterbrook's revolver. You fixed up the business with Rudy Schertz as a good joke. You had followed Patrick Simmons into the far room, and when the lights went out, you slipped out through the carefully oiled door. You shot at Miss Blacklock, and then you killed Rudy Schertz. A few seconds later, you were back in the drawing room, clicking your lighter.
For a moment, Edmund seemed at a loss for words, and then he spluttered out of it.
The whole idea is monstrous. Why me? What earthly motive had I got?
If Miss Blacklock dies before Mrs. Girdler, two people inherit, remember. The two we know of as Pip and Emma. Julia Simmons has turned out to be Emma.
And you think I'm Pip? Edmund laughed. I mean, it's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I'm about the right age, nothing else. And I can prove to you, you damned fool, that I am Edmund Swettenham. Birth certificate, schools, university, everything.
He isn't Pip. The voice came from the shadows in the corner. Philippa Hames came forward, her face pale. I'm Pip, Inspector.
You, Mrs. Hames?
Yes. Everybody seems to have assumed that Pip was a boy. Julia knew, of course, that her twin was another girl. I don't know why she didn't say so this afternoon.
Family solidarity, said Julia. I suddenly realized who you were. I'd had no idea till that moment.
I'd had the same idea as Julia did, said Philippa, her voice trembling a little. After I lost my husband and the war was over, I wondered what I was going to do. My mother died many years ago. I found out about my Girdler relations. Mrs. Girdler was dying, and at her death the money would go to a Miss Blacklock. I found out where Miss Blacklock lived, and I came here. I took a job with Mrs. Lucas. I hoped that, since this Miss Blacklock was an elderly woman without relatives, she might perhaps be willing to help. Not me, because I could work, but help with Harry's education. After all, it was Girdler money, and she'd no one particular of her own to spend it on. And then Philippa spoke faster. It was as though now her long reserve had broken down. She couldn't get the words out fast enough. That hold-up happened, and I began to be frightened, because it seemed to me that the only possible person with a motive for killing Miss Blacklock was me. I hadn't the least idea who Julia was. We aren't identical twins, and we're not much alike to look at. No, it seemed as though I was the only one bound to be suspected. She stopped and pushed her fair hair back from her face, and Craddock suddenly realized that the faded snapshot in the box of letters must have been a photograph of Philippa's mother. The likeness was undeniable. He knew, too, why that mention of closing and unclosing hands had seemed familiar. Philippa was doing it now. Miss Blacklock has been good to me. Very, very good to me. I didn't try to kill her. I never thought of killing her. But all the same, I'm Pip. She added, you see, you needn't suspect Edmund any more.
Needn't I? Said Craddock.
Again there was that acid, biting tone in his voice. Edmund Swettenham's a young man who's fond of money.
A young man, perhaps, who would like to marry a rich wife. But she wouldn't be a rich wife unless Miss Blacklock died before Mrs. Girdler. And since it seemed almost certain that Mrs. Girdler would die before Miss Blacklock, well, he had to do something about it. Didn't you, Mr. Swettenham?
It's a damned lie, Edmund shouted. And then suddenly a sound rose on the air. It came from the kitchen, a long, unearthly shriek of terror.
That isn't Mitzi, cried Julia. No, said Inspector Craddock. It's someone who's murdered three people. Chapter 22, The Truth. When the inspector turned on Edmund Swettenham, Mitzi had crept quietly out of the room and back to the kitchen. She was running water into the sink when Miss Blacklock entered. Mitzi gave her a shamefaced, sideways look. "What a liar you are, Mitzi," said Miss Blacklock pleasantly. "Oh, here, that isn't the way to wash up. The silver first, and fill the sink right up. You can't wash up in about 2 inches of water." Mitzi turned the taps on obediently.
"You are not angry at what I say, Miss Blacklock?" she asked.
"If I were to be angry at all the lies you tell, I should never be out of a temper," said Miss Blacklock.
"I will go and say to the inspector that I make it all up, shall I?" asked Mitzi.
"He knows that already," said Miss Blacklock pleasantly. Mitzi turned off the taps, and as she did so, two hands came up behind her head and with one swift movement forced it down into the water-filled sink.
"Only I know that you're telling the truth for once," said Miss Blacklock viciously. Mitzi thrashed and struggled, but Miss Blacklock was strong, and her hands held the girl's head firmly under the water. Then from somewhere quite close behind her, Dora Bunner's voice rose piteously on the air.
"Oh, Lottie! Lottie, don't do it! Lottie!"
Miss Blacklock screamed. Her hands flew up in the air, and Mitzi, released, came up choking and spluttering. Miss Blacklock screamed again and again, for there was no one except Mitzi there in the kitchen with her.
"Oh, Dora! Dora, forgive me! I had to! I had to!"
She rushed distractedly towards the scullery door, and the bulk of Sergeant Fletcher barred her way, just as Miss Marple stepped flushed and triumphant out of the broom cupboard.
"I could always mimic people's voices," said Miss Marple.
"You'll have to come with me, madam," said Sergeant Fletcher. "I was a witness of your attempt to drown this girl, and there will be other charges. I must warn you, Letitia Blacklock..."
"Charlotte Blacklock," corrected Miss Marple. "That's who she is, you know. Under that choker of pearls she always wears, you'll find the scar of the operation."
"Operation?"
"Operation for goitre." Miss Blacklock, quite calm now, looked at Miss Marple.
"So you know all about it," she said.
"Yes. I've known for some time." Charlotte Blacklock sat down by the table and began to cry.
"You shouldn't have done that," she said.
"Not made Dora's voice come. I loved Dora. I really loved Dora."
Inspector Craddock and the others had crowded in the doorway. Constable Edwards, who added a knowledge of first aid and artificial respiration to his other accomplishments, was busy with Mitzi. As soon as Mitzi could speak, she was lyrical with self-praise.
"I do that good, do I not? I am clever. And I am brave. Oh, I am brave. Very, very nearly was I murdered, too. But I am so brave, I risk everything."
With a rush, Miss Hinchcliffe thrust aside the others and leapt upon the weeping figure of Charlotte Blacklock by the table. It took all Sergeant Fletcher's strength to hold her off.
"Now then," he said,
Now then, no, no, Miss Hinchcliffe.
Between clenched teeth, Miss Hinchcliffe was muttering,
"Let me get at her, just let me get at her. It was she who killed Amy Murgatroyd."
Charlotte Blacklock looked up and sniffed. "I didn't want to kill her. I didn't want to kill anybody. I had to. But it's Dora I mind about. After Dora was dead, I was all alone. Ever since she died, I've been alone. Oh, Dora! Dora!"
And once again, she dropped her head on her hands and wept.